What's going on, everybody? This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lote, and today we are joined by Joseph Gozlan. Joseph is a commercial real estate investor and broker who currently manages 250,000 square feet of commercial real estate in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He's based in Dallas, owns a lot of real estate there as well. Today, we're going to dig into what he's up to today in the industrial and retail real estate space. We might talk about how he pivoted asset classes. There's a lot we're going to discuss. There's so many folks that have started looking into industrial and retail investing today, but there's a lot of big questions about how those asset classes work and how investors like Joseph realize and create value in those asset classes. So a lot we're going to discuss today. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit more about what types of assets you're investing in these days?
Yeah, absolutely. So taking it a little bit back, we started like everybody else with single families and duplex, and then we graduated to multifamily. We syndicated hundreds of apartments in the past. And then we transitioned in the last couple of years, we transitioned over to triple net properties, whether it's industrial or retail. We also have our own commercial property management on top of a brokerage, like you mentioned. So this is where we really put our focus in today on retail and industrial, but with the emphasis on triple net leases. And triple net, for the audience that might not know what it is, it means that the landlord gets to pass on all the expenses that relates to the property onto the tenant. So taxes, insurance, maintenance, labor, the actual leases is the most important thing. So some leases call for roof and structure still being the responsibility of the owner. Sometimes it's all the responsibility of the tenant, but the ability to transfer that risk over is absolutely incredible. And that's really why we started focusing on those.
Nice. So retail, we'll talk a little bit about industrial in a little while, but retail, I think a lot of folks are going to hear that and probably say, but Amazon's destroying retail, isn't it? Isn't that the big story? But is that really true? What types of retail properties do you buy? What tenants do you look for? How do you really make that strategy work?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And Amazon is absolutely a factor in the conversation of retail. But when was the last time you got a haircut at Amazon? Or when Amazon gave you a cup of coffee? Went to lunch at Amazon? No? So this is really where we focus on. Our main focus in the retail world is that neighborhood retail strip, the service strips. Those are the ones that are great. And they're going to stay there forever. Because guess what? If you bought something on Amazon Prime and you decided you don't like it and you want to send it back, they send you to the retail strip, to the UPS store to drop the package, right? So even Amazon needs those. And Amazon internally is already having conversations about opening Amazon stores and stuff like that. And it's because they realize that people still need to put hands on stuff. And they realize that people need to, what it's called, showrooming. They might go look at it at the store and then go buy online, but they still need eyes and hands on stuff. And sometimes the two-day shipping is just not fast enough. So that's really why Amazon, while it's a threat to retail in general, it's not a threat to all kinds of retail.
Great. Okay. I appreciate that explanation. So you being a broker and an investor, that means you know how to find deals. You know the process of going about finding potential sellers and evaluating potential value opportunities, if you will. So in the retail context specifically, how do you approach that problem? I mean, do you just go around looking for like vacant retail space and say, hey, I bet I could put a tenant in this and improve its value if I bought the property? What's the actual process of finding a value opportunity, if that is indeed the strategy you have here?
So just like any other asset class, there's a lot of ways where you can find those opportunities and ways you can find deals. The easiest thing, especially in today's environment, which was not possible in 2021 and at the beginning of 2022, is go find a decent deal that is there and you like everything about it except the price, and go negotiate a better price. You know, in 2021, you would suggest anything less than asking and they would look at you laughing, right? You should be coming with more than asking, right? But in today's world, owners have realized that that party is over and we can make offers and we can get into a negotiation where we can take a decent deal and make it a great deal. So that's the easiest way to look at it, is like find something you like, everything about it, the deal except the price, and let's go negotiate the price. That's one thing. The other thing is vacancies. Vacancy is definitely something that is an opportunity for a value add. It's important, though, to really understand why there is a vacancy, because not all vacancy can be filled. And the challenge with retail and industrial is that vacancy doesn't turn necessarily as fast as it would in residential, for example. So you can buy an apartment building that is 30% vacant, and with enough money and energy, you can get at least pretty fast, because coming in and getting $100,000 apartment is not that big of a commitment. Versus if you have a retail strip and it's, let's say, 50,000 square foot, and you have 20,000 square foot vacant, it's not going to be a month or two. It's going to take a little while until you turn it. That's one thing. The other thing that is different is, again, same example of that apartment complex. I have vacant apartments. Each apartment is going to cost me $2,000-$4,000 to get ready to lease. When I'm leasing a 20,000 square foot space, I'm going to have to offer the tenant, if it's a big enough tenant, what's called TI, tenant improvement budget, which means I'm going to have to spend $20,000-$50,000 out of my own pocket to get the tenant into that space. So the world of retail and industrial sometimes depends on, again, the kind, might require bigger moves and more time. Now, if you look at the neighborhood strips, then you can have 2,000 square foot units that are easier to move. If you look at industrial, I love the flex buildings, because again, it's down to 1,200, 1,500, 2,000 square foot spaces that are great. And when we get to the industrial, we can talk about why I love flex and what's great about it.
Okay, so there's a ton there. And I really wanted to focus around what in the retail space to you is what you would consider a good vacancy versus a bad vacancy. And you mentioned a few things regarding like square footage being relevant and things along those lines, and maybe having to offer a tenant improvement budget, which cuts into your overall income. It's concessions you have to give to your potential tenant. But in a broad sense, when you're looking at a vacant retail property, other than things like square footage, what's good versus bad, if you will?
So I want to know who is the potential tenant and what can I put over there. So conversation with the city and the planning department is crucial, because there's a lot of things that you don't factor until you get into retail. So I could have a vacant space and 100 people wants to put an event center there, but noise regulations and there's a school right behind the building, so you can't sell liquor in that space, and so on. So all these things are critical to understand before you get into the retail world. I would love to find a retail strip that has a lot of traffic. If it has a lot of traffic and the vacancy is small units, then I can easily find small business owners that want to get started and put them in that space. Anywhere from a donut store to a sandwich place, a hairdresser, a nail salon. There's so many of those small business owners that need a space. So I love those neighborhood strip centers. It's easier. If you would have told me that you're looking at a 50,000 square foot ex Albertsons, right, and it's vacant, now you have to get creative, because there's no other Albertsons waiting in line to get in there. So now what do I do with 50,000 square foot? What do I do with 100,000 square foot of vacant spot? So, and that's what I love about real estate. You can always get creative. And I've seen some people get really creative with these things, right? Those big spaces, I've seen people put gyms in there. I've seen people put, they build climate control stealth storage inside them because you already have everything. It's just a bunch of frames and sheetrock and roll-up doors. I've seen people put one of those kids' bouncy house things, trampolines and so on, inside because they need height and they need space. So you can get creative. You can find opportunities to fill almost any retail space. It's just going to take a little bit longer because you got to find the right tenant. And that's where we come in as brokerage and management is you got to do it the right way. If I have a pizza place in the shopping center, I cannot bring another pizza place. Right? You have to make sure that you keep, it's not, and again, compared to apartments, if I have a family with two kids, I can still bring another family with two kids. And I can bring a single guy or two roommates. So in the retail world, you got to make sure you keep a good mix because if they're not symbiotic, they're going to cannibalize on each other and it's going to be a problem.
That makes sense. The only company that doesn't seem to have a problem with that is Starbucks. They don't seem to mind putting Starbucks right next to each other. No, I'm just joking. So I want to make sure we have some time to talk about your industrial investment strategy as well and why you're including that, what you look for, and kind of, again, talking about things like vacancy being such a big issue in the triple net space, the length of the vacancy, finding the right tenant, everything like that. But we'll get there. About the industrial investments. Just tell us a bit about how that strategy works and how it differs from like the retail investment strategy, if at all.
Yeah. So industrial is really kind of like there's a few kinds. You have the big industrial that usually has one tenant in it. And this is the kind of property you want when you want an asset that is, don't call me unless the building is on fire. And there is a huge value to that, and it's worth returns, right? So I teach all of my investors the most important benchmark I have ever learned in my career in investing is headaches to returns ratio. And it's a very important thing. And as you, when you're younger and you're at the beginning, you're willing to take more headaches so you can get more returns. And as I get older and the transactions become a little bit bigger, then I'm willing to take off some of my my returns and in return to a lot less headaches. And if you have a large industrial building that has a single tenant in there, they usually don't move. So think about it this way. If you have an industrial tenant in a 20,000 square foot building, there's only two reasons why they would move. Either they outgrew your 20,000 square feet, and now comes the question, do they expand or just move out to a bigger space? Or they're going out of business. Or they lost basically more than 50% of their business. So there's only two reasons for them to move out. There's no, I don't like the neighbors. There's no, I don't like the environment. There's no, all their customers know where they are. All the trucking knows where to get to. They've put a lot of money and time into transforming the building to what they need to operate. So for them to move is a big, big hustle, which means it's a very quote unquote sticky tenant. The other kind of industrial, which I'm a very big fan of, I mentioned earlier, is flex. So a flex industrial building would be a building that has multiple roll-up doors. And it caters to three different audiences, but it's pretty much recession-proof. So the first type is your businesses that are established enough and they are a step above the man in the van. So think about all your blue-collar businesses, the landscaping, the electrician, the plumber. They all start as a man in a van or a man with a trailer. And then as they grow and their business become bigger, now they have three crews, four crews, five vans. Now they need room. They need a space. They can no longer operate from the van or operate from the garage. So they need a space, and they need an industrial space because they don't need an office building, and they don't need a customer. A plumber doesn't need a customer facing space. So a flex building gives them 1,200 to 2,000 square foot area with a big roll up door. They can roll their trucks and their vans into it. They can keep their equipment in there. Usually there's like a small office built into it that they can put an office for the big boss and an office for the secretary or accounts payable. And that's the first clientele that goes to a flex building. The reason it's called flex is you put a slab, you put up four walls, and you put as many doors you can. So when the first client comes in, you ask, okay, how many doors do you want? So let's say every roll-up door area is 1,000 square foot. So you need 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. Oh, you need 2,000? Okay, I'm going to cut the wall here. So it's flexible. You can move it around. And that's very similar to small retail strips in that matter. You know, just because there's a wall between two units doesn't mean I cannot take down the wall and make this unit double size. So the other kind of clientele that goes to a flex building is e-com. So think about the e-commerce startup, the e-commerce business that became. They usually begin at the spare bedroom or at the garage. And then if they become successful, they run out of room and it gets too tight. So they need 1,200 square foot, 1,500 square foot. So they're that's the next level up for them. And then the last type of clientele, and then so far these are both recession proof. The third kind is the rich guy. So he's got too many toys that he cannot fit in a storage unit. So it could be where he works on his car. It could be where he keeps his motorcycles, his boat, his jet skis, and so on. So if they have more stuff than they can put in the house or they can put in a storage unit, then they need that extra 1,200, 1,500 square feet. So with these three kinds of clients that there are recession-proof, I really love that asset class.
So I was going to say I think the interesting thing about that particular model, as the name implies, is its flexibility as compared to the first model you talked about in industrial, where you have one large tenant that's been there for a while. If you lose that guy, replacing that one huge tenant is going to be just a huge, huge mistake, whether they're growing too big or they're going out. You have a hard time filling that vacancy. But if you've got that more flexible space, we have more potential clientele, and you can be, again, flexible with the amount of space they get, then you've got more options for filling your vacancy. So I see the upside there, but I'll throw it back to you.
And keep going. Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct on that one. And you got to realize that when that big single tenant moves out, you could be vacant for a year. So for anybody that is dealing with the big buildings, whether it's industrial or retail, I tell them, underwrite to have a reserve of at least 6 or 8 months of paying mortgage with not getting a dime from the property. You gotta put that into your underwriting. And if you can't put it into your underwriting, then it works. Because that tenant, you're not gonna have to worry about leasing and paying leasing commissions and finding and so on for 5, 10, 20 years. And these guys usually do their own maintenance. They don't need any help. You know, they take care of the building. So those contracts are also favorable on the headache side of things. Now, one thing to kind of talk about in the whole retail, industrial versus multifamily and residential is recovery from or taking advantage of market changes. So one of the reasons multifamily is such a great asset class and it's very popular is because it has short leases, 12 months. So as it makes it a asset that can capitalize on market increases and an asset that can recover from a recession a lot faster. The only faster asset class is self-storage because you have single month leases. That's as fast as you can turn things around. Now, retail is usually 3 to 5 year leases. Industrial can be 5+ years on the big one. And usually the flex is 2-year leases. on an upmarket like we had in the last 10 years, being tied to a certain lease and built-in increases is not a great thing to be in for 5 years. So if you had a Starbucks deal for 10 years where the increases were 2% a year and you bought it at 2012, you literally missed on the entire party. And which is another reason why I like the smaller ones, because their leases are usually 3 years. But if you're looking at a market that is more challenging and in a down market, you're secured because Starbucks is going to pay that raise interest rate and the rent raise every year because that's their contract, regardless of the fact that the market mightn't be flat or even going down. So in an up market, you probably want faster leases. On a down market, you want longer leases.
So let's talk a bit before we go to the three questions I ask every guest on the show. In the flex space model, what would you say is your like sweet spot in when you see a property and you say, I'm very interested in this? Is it a property that has, 50% occupancy and you've got another 50% you can fill? Do you want an entirely vacant property? What to you is like a Goldilocks zone? When you see it, you're just like, I need to have this property.
So for me, a bigger factor than occupancy is location. So I can have a large industrial outside city limits and that will be fine because that's where the factory is. That's where the warehouse is. But when I'm looking at flex, those three types of clients that I mentioned earlier, they want it close and convenient. They don't want to drive 45 minutes to get to their office. The rich guy doesn't want to drive 45 minutes to play with his toys. So location is more critical for me when I'm looking at a flex building than almost any other factor. And then on the vacancy, like you mentioned earlier, I can get that list faster, so I'm not worried. You want to give me a completely vacant, give me a completely vacant. The challenge with a completely vacant is how do I get it financed? So in terms of being able to finance things, I'd appreciate something that is, let's say, 60 to 80% occupied. Then I can make the case that, okay, let me buy this thing, finance me, and I'm going to go and take that value add and make it full real quick.
So when it's vacant and financing is going to be an issue, do you look to pay all cash or do you try to get something like seller financing? Or are sellers in this space like, I'm not going to do seller financing, I need all cash? What do you look for in that case?
Well, everybody makes seller financing like the Holy Grail, but in reality, it doesn't matter. Whether the money comes from the bank or comes from the seller, there's going to be an interest rate on it. There's going to be terms on that deal. Mm-hmm. The only real value that comes with seller financing is the speed in which you can close the deal. But if the seller financing is at 10% and I can get a bank loan at 7, I'm going to go get the bank loan at 7. It makes no sense to pay 10. Now, if the bank wants 35% down and the seller is willing to give it to me at 5% down, okay, now we got a different conversation. So the terms are going to be more critical than just because it's a seller financing. And I've seen people hyper fixate on kind of like, oh, I got to get a seller financing. It's like, they're not all great. So yeah. So it comes down to, we are investors. We don't make emotional decisions. We put things in an Excel file. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, we walk away.
Love that. Total words of wisdom. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor. Tracking your rental property business no longer needs to be a hassle. Stessa, a new financial technology company, helps real estate investors just like you take their real estate rental portfolio to the next level by automating the financials of their rental property portfolio. You can get started with just $20 a month to take your rental business to the next level by tracking your properties, automatically collecting rent, tracking your expenses, and so much more. Using technology can take so much of the hassle out of owning a rental property portfolio. So check out Stessa today by using our link in the description, and you can get started for free or upgrade to their pro package for just $20 a month. This type of software can save you a ton of time. Go check out Stessa today by using our link in the show notes. Now, back to the show. All right, Joseph, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
Great. First one, what's your number one book recommendation?
Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. This book will change your life. I go back and I read this book at least once or twice a year. It helps not only with business, it helps with your personal life. It helps with just every interaction we have with any other human being is a negotiation of some sort. So probably the best book.
Question number two, who or what inspires you?
That's a good question, right? Because I got inspired by a lot of different people along the way. And sometimes you look at someone and you go, I really want to do what he does. And sometimes you look at someone and you go, I really want to have what he has. So I draw inspiration from different things all the time. It's not necessarily a certain person or a certain thing that drives. It's kind of like I like to think about where I want to be in the next few years. And I try to find someone that I can follow, I can learn from, I can do and contact that person if possible to see, it's like, hey, can I bring value to you in any way? And if I can bring them value, then I know it'll come back. That's just my philosophy. It's kind of like but I'm trying not to go beyond my stratosphere. And it's kind of like, look, I can have a conversation with Elon Musk and he can give me financial advice, which, for the record, Elon, if you're listening, I would love to. But the reality is, whatever advice he's going to give me, I'm not going to be able to take action on. The things he can pull and the things he can do and the doors that are open to him are not open to me yet. So it's about find someone that is just one level up from you in the stratosphere and try to model them instead of try to model someone that is 10 levels above you in the stratosphere. Because they forgot what is the right advice for you. And that's the problem.
I think that's a great point. Question number three, think about Joseph at 80 years old. If you could sit down and have a conversation or a phone call with him, what advice do you think 80-year-old Joseph would give to Joseph of today?
Well, there's probably going to be a few key ones. One is 2009 is the bottom, buy everything.
Too late.
Too late, right? Yeah. The other one, and so we know that conversation didn't happen yet. The other thing would be skip the little things. The single family, the duplex. I wish somebody introduced me to large commercial properties back when I just started real estate. Because it's a different game. It's not like, oh, I can learn how to ride a bicycle so I can ride a motorcycle. It's not the same. So I would skip the single and the residential side of things. And then here's a piece of advice I did get when I was younger, but I was not ready for it, is I no longer do things people can sleep in.
Yeah. You've gotten out of the apartment game, gotten fully into commercial. So
yeah.
Makes sense. And Joseph, I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing this knowledge about your specific models for investing in retail and flex space industrial properties. If folks want to reach out and get in touch, where can they track you down?
Yeah, on our website, we're everywhere on every social media, but ebgtx.com is our website. It's very easy, 5 letters, Eureka Business Group, Texas, EBGTX. And you can reach out to us there.
Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.